And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Awesome Mania. I'm Michael Lindenbaum, as always joined by my co-host, Mr. Ben Taylor.
What is up, ladies and gentlemen? It is far too early in the morning for this.
It is like 8:40 in the morning. I am very subdued because there are people in the house sleeping currently.
I'm subdued because I've had like not enough caffeine.
So Ben texted me Sunday night. He wanted to discuss payback.
Discuss in inverted commas.
And then also,
I do believe the exact quote was, "I can't wait 2 weeks to shit on this."
Yeah, and then last night during Raw, Ben asked me, "How's Raw?" Which I was watching NHL hockey because
of elimination games. To preface, I was watching the new Bill and Ted movie.
Yes.
And I sent Mike a message and I said, "What have I missed?" Because I thought Mike would be watching Raw, but he was watching hockey. And he goes, "I don't know, let's find out." And then he sent me the list of stuff and I went, "You know what? Fuck it, I'm done. I'm out."
But at least we have NXT tonight.
Yeah, it's true.
Look forward to.
Yeah.
But we'll do news and notes first, because there is like three things in news that we got to talk about real quick.
Three WWE kind of centric pieces of news. Number one,
Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
So his contract expired after WrestleMania 36. And also, apparently, his merchandise contract just expired, which is why all of his merchandise has been pulled off the WWE website. Yep. However, it should be noted that this is being considered not a big deal backstage, as when Lesnar is ready to return, aka when fans are allowed in arenas,
yeah,
he'll come back to do business with WWE, or if WWE really, really needs him to come back, they're going to give him an offer he can't refuse. So Lesnar, he's gone. I mean, I guess we can celebrate that, but he's going to be back at some point once, you know, the two sides come to a new contract.
Yeah, there'll be a thing.
Yeah. Next up, you have Mauro Ranallo announcing on Facebook, and then WWE confirming that they have mutually parted ways.
Yep.
Mauro is looking towards to working on, obviously, the boxing with Showtime and with all the other projects that he's working on currently.
He also mentioned that he was going to look after his mother's health a bit as well, which, fair play to the guy.
Yeah, and it's actually, I believe, the reason he missed TakeOver, because they said he had to go back to Canada to tend to a family emergency. And this is something that has taken place over the last week, where the two sides agreed to part ways.
Yeah.
And then in the final bit of WWE news, sticking with NXT, Wade Barrett is apparently in negotiations with WWE to return full-time as an announcer for NXT.
Yeah.
So take the bad news of Mauro Ranallo leaving, yeah, and include the good news of we could potentially be getting Wade Barrett back full-time.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also, this will come up a little bit when we talk about Raw, because we discussed on the actual episode of Awesome Mania, this is a special, that Rey Mysterio was due to take on Seth Rollins on Raw, but it ended up being Dominic Mysterio, because Rey is apparently dealing with a triceps injury.
Yep.
Yeah, they have him out till for quite a while, in fact.
Yeah, it's a torn triceps they announced, but we'll talk more about it because there's actually a backstage segment where we kind of see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's selling the eye, right? Like.
No, the arm.
No, but like in the segment, he's like, "Oh, my eye's still kind of screwed up," but you know, like,
yeah,
kayfabing it as well as the arm to make it seem like it's not just the arm that's got a mount. So anyway.
So with that, let's hop. Do you have any other news, notes, stuff like that? Or was it really just the three?
The Big Show has been canceled.
sorry, Big Show.
Yeah, you aren't that funny to begin with, buddy. I don't think there's anything else to really go over other than it just seems to be that the main stuff is all the commentary shakeups and Brock and returning people like Sami Zayn and stuff like that, but we talked about that already. So
yeah. So with that, let's hop right into Payback, which was this past Sunday. On the pre-show, you had a tag team match, the Riot Squad defeating the Iconics in 9 minutes. Not gonna lie, the Iconics really did their job here on helping sell the story between Liv and Ruby. When you had the moment where I believe it was Peyton pulling or knocking Liv off the ring apron when she was distracted by Billie Kay, and then trying to blame it on Ruby Riott because of the trust issues. And I think they really
get ready to walk away.
Yeah. And then, you know, her going, nah, let me trust her. And then winning the match. I think that was really good storytelling to help rebuild the Riott Squad.
Right. But this is going to couple with something that comes up on Raw.
Yeah.
Right. Because they did this exact same match on Raw. Right? I just... This has made me... Payback has made me realize that the WWE and AEW are two ends of a spectrum. Right? What is the number one complaint we've had about AEW feuds? Shawn Spears and Cody Rhodes. Proud and Powerful Young Bucks. John Moxley, Kenny Omega.
Great build-up. No disappointing endings.
It just stopped. Right? They just ended. Whereas Payback with, and subsequently Raw, with the Mysterio versus Seth and Buddy, with Matt Riddle against King Corbin, the repeat of the Iconics and Liv, and all of that, makes me realize that the WWE let storylines go too long, right? Like Angel Garza and the Street Profits had another, sorry, Angel Garza and Andrade and the Street Profits had another tag match on Raw last night. They've been feuding since WrestleMania.
One could say even before WrestleMania when Austin Theory was in the faction.
Just saying.
Yeah, no, and that's true. I mean, there are storylines that just last too long. And part of it is, I mean, let's look back at years ago. How long was the John Cena-Randy Orton feud going for? Yeah. How long was the John Cena-Edge feud going for?
Yep.
I mean, that's just two examples right there. But like, God, you can even go with the Shawn Michaels Triple H feud. So, but yeah, I mean, I agree. There are feuds that go on too long, but we can definitely say with what happened last night, at least the Iconics Riott Squad one officially ended.
Yeah, but it seems to have started up Peyton and Billy. But we'll get to that when we'll get to that. More.
Yeah.
So the main thing that set me off about Payback, because I reached out to Mike and I was like, look, dude, I need to talk about this. And the main thing that set me off about Payback wasn't all the filler in the undercard. Because despite myself, I enjoyed most of the matches on the undercard. Right?
Yeah.
It was the main event. And they decided to do this thing where Braun and Bray beat the ever living shit out of each other for like 10 minutes. The ring collapsed after a superplex. Then Roman came down. Then faffed around for a bit, then got a pinfall. Right?
It wasn't the cleanest ending.
Now imagine if the ringer collapsed, Roman came down, signed the contract, walked down, pinned one of them and left, and he won the Universal title without throwing a single offensive move.
Yeah, they definitely screwed up.
This is what I mean. One single booking decision can completely change the way that you look at a superstar and its outcome, right?
Yeah.
The way that they portrayed Roman was someone who was smart, who picked this spot, but still had to earn his victory, right? Which to some people can be like, okay, he still had to earn the victory a little way, right? You have him come down and you have him win that title without having thrown a single offensive move. You support the heel thing even harder, right? It's just...
Although you have to admit, we finally found the Fiend's weakness, and that's getting kicked straight in the nuts.
Which seems to be Lesnar's weakness, which seems to be...
Yeah.
And then they finally did the stuff with Alexa backstage watching The Fiend, right? And I'm like, oh, look, it's that stuff they should have done at SummerSlam.
Yeah. But I definitely agree. I think if they had done the ring collapse, which, by the way, bump of the night goes to Charles Robinson for the way he went out of the ring.
Yeah.
I was just watching that again this morning, just that bump alone. I agree. I think what they should have done is the moment Roman came out there, a new referee should have ran out there at the same time. Or what they should have done is when the ring collapsed, you had a couple referees run out there to check on, like, yeah, Braun and Bray and Robinson. And then that's when Roman comes out. He signs the contract. He comes out, and then he just pins Braun.
Because he came down, right? His music hit, and he came down with a chair in hand, signed the contract on the ramp, walked out, and was like, there's no referee.
And that's what I'm saying. That's why they probably should have, like, when the ring collapsed, they should have sent referees out there.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, if they're supposed to be being portrayed as, like, this think of everything group outsmarting Bray and Braun, Paul should have brought a referee with him.
Yeah.
Right? And then he goes down and...
He's like, oh, where's the ref?
He pins...
Wyatt.
Bray twice?
Yeah, he goes to pin Bray twice.
Then he tries pinning Braun. Then he's like, oh, I'm just going to hit someone with a chair now. Right? So he wires out Braun with a chair. And then he goes to wear out Bray with a chair, gets a mandible claw, kicks Bray in the dick, spears Braun and pins him. And it's like, what did that achieve? Like, it didn't achieve anything.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, okay. What they could have easily done is take all that stuff that they ended up doing in the match, and again, going back to that one thing, have the referees come out and check on the superstars. This isn't the first time a ring has collapsed.
Yeah, they should be used to this by now.
So when a ring collapses, you have them run out, like, immediately, like they always do. To check on everybody, because then you already have a referee out there. Have Braun take the pin right then and there,
yeah,
and then Roman can be celebrating with the title. And he goes, you know what? I'm going to cause more destruction. grabs the chair post and then starts wailing
on Braun. Or just take the title and leave. Yeah. You're trying to portray the guy as a heel, right? There is nothing more heelish than winning a title
and just walking out,
having done nothing and just leaving.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I agree with the booking standpoint that you're at. They could have definitely done it better for that. So
don't get me wrong. Overall, Payback was a really good show. Bobby Lashley and Apollo Crews had a good match.
Yep.
Big E and Sheamus just big lad slapping meat. Matt Riddle and King Corbin was about as good as King Corbin can get. Right? I don't like the floaty bro as a finisher. Just use the permission. Right?
Yeah.
Especially since through the entire match, King Corbin had been selling the ribs. Let's put him in the permission.
Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax defeating Bayley and Sasha.
I hate that this match happened, right? I hate that this match happened. However, I love that Baszler looked like $1 million.
Dude, that double submission to finish the match?
Yeah.
Using Sasha's arm to essentially choke out Bayley to force Bayley to tap was genius. That was great. You had Keith Lee spirit bombing the soul out of Randy Orton.
Yeah.
And what it was the shortest match of the night at 6 minutes, 40 seconds.
It's quite interesting because as I said on Twitter, the fact that he beat Randy Orton quickly is a huge feather in his cap. However, the visual of Randy Orton after the three count, where he's just limp and lifeless on the floor, on the ground, is $1 million thing.
Yeah, he literally spirit bombed a lot of it.
They then went and balls that up on Raw, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know, man, like.
But yeah, no, that was a great match. And then you had Dominic and Rey Mysterio defeating Rollins and Murphy.
In another filler match.
And what was a 16-minute match, which was also the longest match of the night.
It was a good match, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like Dominic's frog splash. I think it looks noodly. He doesn't pop it enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I
definitely think some of the key takeaways out of this pay-per-view is you reestablish Riot Squad.
Yeah.
You legitimize the Hurt Business with Bobby Lashley getting the U.S. title. You
continue to build Big E.
Yeah, you continue to build Big E. You continue to build Matt Riddle.
There was a moment after the match where I was just like, finally, Matt Riddle is done with King Corbin. But no.
Yeah. You get the tag team titles off of Sasha and Bayley, continuing the erosion between those two.
Right, but you put them on two people that are still looking to feud for the women's titles.
Yeah.
Right? Both of them have their eyes on Asuka. Right? So the tag titles haven't stopped being
a focus.
No, they haven't stopped being
an accessory. Yeah.
In the world title picture. The whole.
Yeah. Then you got Keith Lee going over, which is something that Vince wanted Orton to do, which Orton gladly did.
Yep.
The Mysterio Rollins thing was a thing.
Yeah.
And then Roman got the title and pinned Braun, which we all expected to protect the Fiend.
There's something strange, right? For those of you that have been following wrestling for a while, there was a controversy about the WWE piping in cheering for Roman, right? It feels really weird to be living in a world where they're piping in boos for Roman. It just feels weird. But yeah, it just felt like what it honestly felt like is the first part of the match before Roman came out was what the rest of their SummerSlam match was supposed to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because it was much better than a lot of what they did at SummerSlam.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was actually funny. Like, I didn't dawn on me beforehand until I saw somebody noted on Twitter. I think it might have been Alex McCarthy or Ryan Satine, where they go, there's no LED boards on the ring, and they don't have the LED ring posts. And then everyone's
when the ring's going to collapse, yeah.
Well, they said it could have been one of two things. It could have been either A, the ring collapsing, which it was, or B, Retribution, who, according to CM Punk, took the night off to watch hockey. So,
well, we all know that Retribution doesn't work pay-per-views, dude, because they weren't at SummerSlam either.
They weren't on SmackDown last week either.
Weren't they?
No, they weren't on SmackDown.
I thought they were.
No, they were only on Raw.
Okay.
To take out the Mysterios. It's one of those weird things. But yeah, no, they, but of course Retribution came back last night.
Yeah.
Took out Andrade, Selena, and the Street Profits, and Angel Garza ran with his tail between his legs.
Yep. Yeah. Remember that one episode of Raw when Retribution showed up and then like the entire locker room emptied out and ran them off. And then, or was that SmackDown?
That was SmackDown.
That was SmackDown. It's probably why Retribution didn't come back.
Maybe.
Storytelling. But yeah. The thing with Raw, do we have a match listing for Raw?
I have it in front of me. So you opened up with a promo from Randy Orton saying that he's entitled to a title match with Drew at Clash of Champions on September 27th, which brings out Keith Lee.
I've never understood why it's called Clash of Champions when the champions don't clash.
Yeah. And then we ended up getting the first of the three matches. You get three matches. The winners would go on to a triple threat match at the end of the night to determine who would become the number one contender to Drew McIntyre. It would lead to the first match of Keith Lee versus Dolph Ziggler, which Lee would spirit bomb Ziggler for the victory. Next up, you would have Asuka wants a new challenger. Mickie James versus Lana would take place, which would see Mickie defeat Lana by pinfall. Should be noted that beforehand also, Asuka interrupted Shane and Nia Jax as the new champions argued. And also Natalya and Lana both attacked Asuka and Mickie James. Obviously Mickie James would obviously defeat that. Then you would have a number one contenders qualifier with Randy Orton versus Kevin Owens, which when Randy Orton walked out of Aleister Black's locker room just ahead of his qualifier. And as a result, the Dutch Destroyer would attack Kevin Owens, which would just lead to a quick RKO for Orton to get the pinfall. Which is kind of smart because you don't do Orton versus Owens and not give it away on a pay-per-view or on a TV. You can put that on pay-per-view. So that would be a great match.
It is a smart way to keep that to be a match down the road.
Yeah.
And how to start Owen, because they've been teasing Owens and Aleister Black for a while, haven't they?
They actually just started that last week.
Well, but that's what I mean. It's like they've actually started getting physical now, though, right?
Yeah, yeah, because Black, what was it? Black returned to television.
So does that mean that Black's going to be turning heel?
Essentially, yeah, because what happened was last week, Black returned to TV on the KO show.
Yeah.
And Owens was talking to him about like dealing with Rollins and stuff like that. And just out of the blue, Black just, or out of the blue, Black acted like his eye was bothering him and then just flat out assaulted Owens. And so like this week was the continuation of what happened last week on Raw.
Right.
Next up, you had the Hurt Business versus Cedric Alexander and the Viking Raiders. Alexander and the Raiders defeated the Hurt Business. Which then afterwards, backstage, the Hurt Business would attack Alexander.
Yeah.
Then you had a number one contender loser disbands match between the Iconics and the Riot Squad.
I remember because this was right after this is where I stopped watching the movie, right? And I messaged you. I was like, what's happened? And I went on Twitter, and the very first thing I saw was a tweet going, well, the Iconics have to disband. And I was like, what?
Yeah. So the Riot Squad defeated the Iconics by pinfall as a result.
Have you seen it?
The match? Or...
Yeah. The end.
No, I haven't seen the
end. It's a series of shitty roll-ups.
Yeah. And then, of course,
Iconics... I'm sorry to keep breaking you off here, Mike, but the Iconics, one of the most established women's actual teams on your roster, if not, if you'll pardon my saying so, the only actual women's team on your roster, you break up out of the blue with a series of shitty roll-ups.
And one, it could have been safe for a pay-per-view where this match could have happened. Like, you, because you raised the stakes going into the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Saying, like, whoever wins, you get to be number one contenders to the tag team titles. But if you're the losing team, you have to disband. And then you just build that up leading up for weeks. And especially the fact that they've been doing the Iconics Riot Squad thing where, like, can Liv trust Ruby? That's the perfect storytelling right there going into said match.
Right.
But then, but real quick, I want to throw this out there because I'm using Bleacher Report for the card. And I've been skipping, like, their analysis and stuff. They said this about this match. Analysis. After a surprisingly good tag team match at Payback, this was underwhelming.
Yeah, it was shitty.
The women got less time again, and the action was sloppy. It made sense to build to such a big moment for the rivalry, but this was far too rushed. The Iconics went from a cohesive tag team Sunday to disbanded by the end of the night Monday. It was an awkward transition. While this did a good job selling that the Riot Squad is back, setting the duo up for a title shot, breaking up Royce and Kay should have taken more time.
Yeah.
And that's straight from Bleacher
Report. Exactly what I just said, and you didn't need to quote Bleacher Report.
Well, I was more about that first... Well, the thing about me was more about that first paragraph. Was the fact that...
Like I said, series of shitty roll-ups.
Yeah. I'm happy...
That's garbage.
I mean, I'm happy for Riot Squad because they're getting the title shot. And what was that one thing I texted you after we recorded Awesome Mania when they added the match to the pre-show? It's like, why aren't one of these two teams fighting for the tag team titles instead of Shayna and Nia?
Or just put the number one contendership thing
on that. On
the match at
Payback.
Payback.
Yeah.
It's just awful.
Then you had the third qualifier, Seth Rollins versus Dominic Mysterio. Early in the night that you saw Rey Mysterio, who was selling the eye, but also you noticed that there was a big sleeve on his arm to help with the torn tricep. Rollins would defeat Dominic via pinfall. And here is actually also an interesting note. This is the first time you see Mysterio's daughter, Dominic's sister.
Yeah.
Because Ray, Dominic, Leah, that's the name of the sister, and Angie, they're all backstage, and they're actually watching the match from backstage.
There was a whole lot of people perving over the daughter on Reddit, which was kind of weird. Weird.
Then you had
one thing that someone did say about that promo was Ray really needs to stop getting handsy with his wife on a PG TV show. Because he was like hugging her a lot and like maybe even using her for support. I don't know. But like he was like touching her a lot and hugging her and putting his arm around her and stuff. Someone was just like, Ray really needs to stop getting handsy with his wife on this PG TV show.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because you can feel that as time goes on, especially the timing of the show, like what hour it's in.
Yeah.
It starts to get more TV 14. Yeah. Maybe it's something that they were able to work out with Mattel because that is the number one reason why they are PG is the Mattel contract. Next up, you have a tornado tag match, the Street Profits versus Andrade and Angel Garza. This match would go to a no contest because just as Montez Ford was turning the tide, the lights would go out and Retribution would arrive. Garza got his got the ringside guest of Demi Burnett from The Bachelorette, who's been doing a thing with...
Who's been getting more TV time on Raw than the entire AEW women's roster put together.
Yeah, and has been part of a storyline between Angel Garza and Ivar from the Viking Raiders.
Yeah, something like that.
Out of the arena, leaving the Profits, Andrade and Vega to a beatdown, although we'll admit one thing that I will say is that it was kind of cool seeing Selena. She's just kind of like throwing her hands up going like, don't attack me, because you have the three women members of Retribution. And then she just has this look on her face and goes, ah, fuck it. And she just throws, and she just literally goes down swinging, which was a nice
little... It was quite clear, however, for the second episode of Retribution appearing in a row, the two male members were Dominik Dijakovic and Dio Madden.
Yeah.
It's quite clear it was the two of them, and it has been for the last, like, last night, the time before, and I think the time before that, it was quite clearly the three of them.
Yeah, and also Mia Yim has been one of the women.
And one of the women was also Chelsea Green, from what I can tell.
That's interesting. Chelsea Green's one that I haven't heard, but I definitely heard about, like, Dio and Dominic, and then...
No, I mean, Mia was one, like, early on, but, like, recently, they've kept the same people coming out.
Yeah.
And it's been Dio, Dijakovic, Chelsea Green, and two other women.
Mm. No, because... I
don't remember who the other two are.
That's interesting, because, according to the reports, Mia Yim was one of the ones from last week.
Yeah, no. There was no woman tall enough to have been Mia Yim last week. Mia comes up to like Dio, like about here on Dio.
Yeah.
Right? And all of the women were down here on Dio last week.
Yeah. But also
I just realized I'm doing like an indication with my hand on an audio podcast. But yeah.
But it would also make sense that that at the end of it, Mia would be part of the group, though.
Oh, for sure.
Especially if it's a Raw group, because of Keith Lee and Mia Yim's relationship. Yeah.
The problem I think with Mia Yim is there's too much about Mia Yim that if it slips out, will be recognizable. Like her hair or her tattoos or stuff like that, right? So I don't think they're going to use her until her reveal.
Yeah.
Right? It's the same like if they would have put Shotzi Blackheart under there and like her green hair would have shown. You'd be like, guess who that is?
Well, right? Well, it's interesting that you say that because one of the talents has purple hair.
Yeah.
And I forget who she is. And man, I'm blanking on the girl's name, but like they're like, yeah, like even though they've used her a couple weeks in a row, she may not actually be an actual member of the group. So yeah, you can.
They've been using her on Raw Underground as well. She's been like ringside on Raw Underground,
which is actually the next thing I'm about to get to. Which is
everyone was like, "Is that Sasha?" And they're like, "No."
And then the next, which is a great segue to Raw Underground for last week. You had Titus O'Neil make his Raw Underground debut, taking out a pair of Performance Center wrestlers, only for Riddick Moss to step up to him, and the two brawled until Moss went low and got a knockout.
Yeah, he just kicked him in the dick.
Yeah, Jessamyn Duke dominated a woman and then kicked her out of the ring, which then Marina Shafir cut off another one and took her down in like within seconds. And then Peyton Royce sent Billie Kay into the ring alone to get beat down by Duke and Shafir.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Shane McMahon was trying to comfort them.
The weird thing was the Iconics were just there, right? Shane had been like, look, just relax. I know you've had a shitty night, but sit back and watch the fights, right? And then Peyton just throws Billy into the ring. And I'm like, just roll out of the ring. Right? Like, I don't know, they're clearly sort of...
But actually, this is a great point, because I was telling you that I wanted to hold off on our private conversation off air to hear. Yeah. And I was thinking about this on my walk yesterday.
Right.
And the thing I was thinking about is I was breaking down, like, okay, so Shayna and Nia have the tag team titles for better or for worse. And Bayley and Sasha are about to implode. You have Lana and Natalya. You have the Riot Squad. You had now at this point the Iconics. And then in a way, with how things are now, we're building up on Raw, in a way you could have a Mickey Asuka pairing because of what's going on with Lana and Natalya.
Right.
And also with both Nia and Shayna going after Asuka at the same time. So having an ally by your side is good. And then I started thinking about SmackDown, and you theoretically have Dana Brooke and Carmella as a tag team? Question mark. You have, but then you don't really have any other tag teams there. In NXT, you have Kayden Carter and Casey Catarzano as a tag team. And then you have Raquel Gonzalez with Dakota Kai. So when you look at the women's tag teams, it's really thin. But then at the same time, a lot of women aren't being used at the same time because, as you've put it, everything was put on Sasha and Bayley, which hamstring things. But then now we have the draft coming up, whenever that will be. And I'm like thinking, it's like, okay, it kind of makes sense to break up the Iconics, because also, how much more can you get out of the Iconics? They've been together since NXT. Your mic. There we go. Right. You know, they've been together since NXT. It was clear at NXT that Peyton was the one that was going to be the breakout. Because at the live tours, like the one that Mansa Dix and I went to up in Bel Air, Maryland, you know, it was Asuka versus Peyton Royce for the NXT Women's Championship.
What's your point?
My point is that I think, one, they could have easily taken the Iconics and maybe move them over to SmackDown for the draft. They didn't have to break them up. But at the same time, maybe breaking them up is a way of utilizing being able to get more talents on the screen or something. I don't know. My point is that it was just something that was popping in my head.
How does taking a team which can showcase two talents on...
Yeah.
Well, let's say it's a tag team match. You showcase four talents, right? How does breaking up the team, therefore halving the amount of talent in a match, showcase more talent?
I don't know. That
it doesn't.
I don't think that was the point I was trying to get to. Because we did like a slight pause that knocked me out of my train of thought a little bit.
All right, so what is your train of thought?
So I'm trying to think here. Oh, and then you have Duke and Shafir, who are technically with Baszler, who are a tag team. My thought is that was essentially coming down to, you have Riot Squad now, you have Duke and Shafir, who are essentially now on Raw at this point.
Yeah.
That's the point I was getting at. All of your tag teams are on Raw. if you actually look at it legitimately, all of your tag teams are on Raw for women's. You have no tag teams on SmackDown that anyone can feud with. So we're not even probably going to see the women's tag team titles on SmackDown for who knows how long, because you don't have any tag teams. This is the point I was trying to get to. So maybe because now, like I said, you're probably building up to a Mickie James Asuka tag team. You got Lana and Natalya. All your tag teams on Raw, possibly reducing one tag team, build up a single star to maybe start building up the singles division on Raw. That's what I was trying to get to. You're trying to build up your singles division on Raw while trying not to have a big tag team.
You need to build up your singles division on Raw?
Well, how many singles do we have that are legitimate outside of Shayna Baszler?
Baszler, Nia Jax, Sasha Banks.
Sasha's technically SmackDown.
No, she's not. She was the Raw Women's Champion. Just putting that out there. I'm sure there'll be a rematch at some point, so she's in the conversation, right?
Yeah.
Sasha, Nia, Shayna, you have Natalya, you have Lana, you have literally everyone who doesn't hold the women's tag team titles and the people that hold the women's tag team titles, because WWE have established that the women's tag team titles don't mean you can't have a shot at a world title.
Yeah.
So literally everyone you named as part of a tag team is part of the singles division on Raw.
Yeah. I honestly don't know where they're going with it. What would make more sense
is to keep the Iconics together and transfer a couple of the women's tag teams to SmackDown.
Yeah.
That was what would make more sense.
And you have the draft coming up, who knows when. Theoretically next month in October.
Yeah, because doing a draft right before Survivor Series when brand warfare is supposed to be at its strongest is a really good idea.
Yeah. Like, it made sense when they did it last year because they did the whole move to Fox and they wanted to do the actual rosters for the two shows. So that one made sense, but you don't want to do it heading into Survivor Series.
No, if anything, you do it coming out of Survivor Series because everyone's stock's risen.
Yeah.
Right?
And then one last note for Raw Underground. Your main event in the Underground was Apollo Crews taking on Shelton Benjamin. Apollo Crews had Ricochet and Cedric Alexander in his corner while Shelton had the Hurt Business with him, which then turned into a brawl that quickly broke down, and the Hurt Business took out the trio and stood tall.
Yeah.
And then you had the main event, which was the number one contenders match, Randy Orton versus Keith Lee versus Seth Rollins. And of course it would be Orton, or well, first it would be Rollins getting his soul spirit bombed out of him by Keith Lee, followed by Keith Lee getting hit with the RKO, and then Rollins being pinned by Randy Orton to become the number one contender for the WWE Championship.
Yeah.
Not gonna lie, this I actually turned on for this match, because it was intermission, so I was able to take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
And this actually was a really good match between the three.
Yeah, they sold the spirit bomb like it was a world ending move, because Seth Rollins got his soul pole power bombed out, and then Randy Orton hit the RKO on Keith Lee, but then pin Seth Rollins rather than pin Keith Lee.
Yep.
Which is really interesting.
Yeah, I like how they did it that way, because like I was reading last night that like apparently Vince really wants to push Keith Lee to the moon.
Yeah.
And this is actually one way to do it. You pin the guy who took Lee's finisher, even though Lee was not involved in the finish itself.
It puts over his finish pretty big, so.
Yeah. And in a way, it also protects it pretty nicely, too. So,
yeah.
So that was Raw last night. Tonight is NXT. Please note that
Super Tuesday. First of two Super Tuesdays.
Yes, this week and next week are both on Tuesday, but they will be replaying both NXT episodes on their normal night and times, but on the Sci-Fi Network. You can thank the NHL for that, even though now they could easily be on USA tomorrow after the result of one game last night. because now the only game that's being played tomorrow night is being played at 8 p.m. on NBC Sports Network. The other game is that series ended last night. So, but yeah, so they could easily put the replay on USA too if they wanted to, because
it. I'm not going to lie to you. I like it when NXT and AEW are on different nights. Makes it easier to watch it.
Yeah. Well, the whole point that they're doing the replay is so AEW doesn't run unopposed, just like how when AEW was on different nights, they're throwing up on YouTube, like all out to the, you know, up on YouTube. So NXT technically wasn't running unopposed. But tonight we have three confirmed matches. We have what was announced during Monday Night Raw last night, Bronson Reed versus Timothy Thatcher.
Yeah.
And then we have a street fight six-man tag team match where it's Breezango and Isaiah Swerve Scott versus Legado del Fantasma.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the main event, the 60-minute fatal four-way. It's
the only match anyone actually cares about on tomorrow night's show.
Yeah, the 60-minute Iron Man fatal four-way match between Jonathan Q Wrestling Gargano, Tomato Chompers, Adam Cole Bebe, and Finn Balor.
Your boy Finn Balor.
Yep. Which is funny. Johnny Gargano shared a graphic, I think last night or this morning, like a tale of the tape for tonight's match. And it has Finn Balor listed as a two-time NXT champion. But he's a one-time NXT champion.
Does it?
Yeah. Huh. I'll send it to you so you can look.
Didn't he hold the tag titles?
No.
I couldn't see when he and Joe did the tag title thing.
No, they won the tag team tournament, but they never held the tag team titles. Oh, it was the
Dusty Classic.
But the thing is, though, is I think what got confused was the fact that, and I'm sending it over. Yeah, it was tweeted yesterday. I'm sending it over to you now so you can look at it. Mm-hmm. But I think what they're confusing is that when he won the Universal title. Because if you consider all the heavyweight titles that he held in WWE, yes, he is a two-time champion because he held the NXT once and the Universal once.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was very interesting. Although it's a kind of a cool tale of the tape because it tells you what their 2020 record is.
Yeah.
How long their title reigns were and stuff like that. But the fact that they said that Balor is a two-time NXT World Champion is quite interesting.
They had a, I think it was a, is it Jeff Hardy's birthday yesterday?
Yes.
And WWE did this tweet, it's like a happy birthday to our Intercontinental Champion, Jeff Hardy. And Sami Zayn was like, excuse me, he's not your Intercontinental Champion. I am. I have reported you for spreading misinformation.
I love how, I love how they're letting Sammy do that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the storyline. And it should be the storyline for Sami Zayn return, you know, is the whole Intercontinental title thing. So I'm down with it. I'm definitely down with it. So yeah, NXT tonight, normal time, just different night. And then replay will be tomorrow, I believe, on Sci-Fi and maybe at USA at this point, given how the NHL doesn't need USA Network tomorrow night. And and then SmackDown will be Friday.
Yeah.
For the WWE. And then, of course, All Out is this Saturday.
Yeah, what a packed couple of weeks.
Four pay-per-views in 3 weeks.
They've got another one in 3 weeks.
Yep. Just doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. So, alrighty, Mr. Ben. I see 3-2-1 just went live.
Yeah, Jordan's doing a stream thing.
Yeah.
It's Tuesday. which means not only do we have our WoW stream later, but it is the 1st of September. So those of us that pre-ordered the Avengers get to play it a couple of days early. So we're going to be diving balls deep into that, I think. So
nice.
I think I'm supposed to join you on Discord at some point, but I'm not sure he could make up his mind what time he was going to go live. So, yeah. Take that as you will.
So with that, Ben, where could the people find you?
I can't be bothered to do this, mate.
Shorten it up. Just do the basics.
Find me on Twitter at Bob T. Goldfish. You can find my Power Rangers columns at thxthockey.com/bens-journey. You can find out more about the sister show to Awesome Mania, Voices from the Grid, which is a Power Rangers podcast, over at VFTG_PR on Twitter. You can find the video game shenanigans at twitch.tv/321_TV. And yeah, that's about it.
All right, and you can find me on the Twitters at @thelindabomb75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, and of course everything on txhthockey.com, and for this show specifically /awesomemania. So with that, Ben, take us out, buddy.
It feels good to be saying this in 2020, having watched the movie last night. But guys, gals, non-aligned pals, the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other and party on non-gender-specific honorifics.
And until next time, we will see you ringside.
Peace.